The British Touring Car Circus, Lees Thruxton. Everybody had a good time. Some exclusions apply. This is the Thruxton Review.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. We are back once again to take you through all the action from the Thruxton weekend, which was a mix of weather conditions, certainly between Saturday and Sunday. And we were sitting on the sofa on Sunday to watch all three races. So we're going to bring you up to date with all the action. How are you?
Yeah, I am well. Obviously, as you say, it was a good weekend of racing.
Better than you expected?
Thruxton has really improved in recent years, and it's a really good circuit these days. There's a lot of controversy to get into, which we will do so, of course, throughout the pod. There's lots of penalties to go through as well. The stewards certainly earned their corn this weekend. But yeah, it was a good weekend of racing. It was exciting to watch on the sofa. The first time this year we've sat and watched a race on the luxury of the sofa. We will be back trackside for Alton Park next time out as well. How did you find the weekend?
Watching it on the TV for the first time properly this year, so seeing all the in-between races as well, it did feel a little empty.
Well, what the cameras would let you see of the races, which we will get to.
But the actual coverage of the races was iffy at times, but it did feel like there were big gaps in between the normal touring car races and the support races, which really doesn't help with the small calendar or the small timetable, should I say, that we have each weekend.
No, the fact that we saw, I mean, it was fun to see a classic race, don't get me wrong, and it was interesting. I mean, certainly, contact was much more prevalent back in those days, I think it's fair to say. And it was nice to hear Murray Walker and Steve Ryder doing his utmost posh voice from the era. But
he looked so young as well.
He did, yeah. But I mean, it's a sad indictment, really, of you say how empty the calendar is, which I think you're right. We felt that more on the telly than perhaps we even do trackside, which is surprising.
It seemed a shame that they couldn't fill some of that time with a little bit more analysis or a little bit more talking to the drivers and seeing their views and their thoughts on each race. But maybe that's something that they can hopefully improve on going forward. Well,
There were some good bits. I was going to say, the good bits began on the Saturday with qualifying.
Yeah, so we'll get straight into qualifying then. It was wet and windy. Hence the flag.
Hence the flag being knocked over.
It was torrential at times, wasn't it?
It's the sort of conditions that I think, had we been racing, there would have been red flags and cancellations.
I've heard rumours sort of like throughout the paddock of them being surprised that they were actually still qualifying in that sort of weather.
No, it was fine to qualify, and I could understand begrudgingly if they had cancelled or postponed race because there was some standing water down.
Yeah.
But on the qualifying lap, that standing water is there for everybody. If everybody has to avoid it, nobody gets an advantage. So, look, these are supposed to be the best in the business. Yeah. The best in the business have to do it in the rain as well.
Yeah, Sutton was fastest in all three sessions, which isn't much of a surprise. We know how well he goes in the rain, and Ingram wasn't far behind him. Cook was the big casualty from the qualifying session, who had a massive off between Goodwood and Village and a substantial impact with the barrier. Front in, right down the right-hand side of the car and so forth, had to go off to hospital just to have precautionary checks. But he was going to be all good for Sunday, as long as they got the car fixed, which One Motorsport, they know what they're doing, and they did manage to get the car all back in, pointing the right direction.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of innocuous ones where you just dipped the very edge of a wheel on some wet grass and lost the rear and spun very heavily into the tyre barrier, a lot of speed. It wasn't the only casualty of this session, but that was the biggest one, biggest accident we saw within that session.
Yeah, so boost seemed to make very little difference through qualifying, which we kind of assume it's going to do in the rain. It's that classic leveller. And so much so, Dorling was quite surprised by how quick he was in the Toyota, wasn't he?
I'm more surprised how quick Proctor was in the Hyundai, really, given that he was able to get through to the quick six qualifying, having not turned a wheel in anger for two and a half seasons. And come back in to Thruxton in the rain. Not a bad effort.
It's a baptism of fire to step back into, though, isn't it? Halstead did not compete in the session. He was taken ill, we believe, after FP1. Something going on behind the scenes that he didn't even want to elaborate on his social media post after the weekend either.
No, it appears as some form of rib injury potentially sustained in another form of motorsport that he's been competing in. He is hoping to be all clear for Le Mans this weekend, though.
And therefore Alton Park following that up. And the other teams really struggling qualifying, I noticed, were Restart. Considering how quick they looked in practice, I think Smiley was quickest in FP2. both of them then struggled to get out of the first sessions of the qualifying sectors, which for a Hyundai, we thought they would all go well here. And eventually across the weekend they did, but it was a real struggle for a restart racing.
Yep, absolutely. This, of course, meant that Ash Sutton took the pole position from Tom Ingram.
Yep, from Dan Camish, from Mikey Doble, who looked fantastically quick.
As always.
Those four were a gap above everyone else in that quick six. And it would be an interesting start to race day.
Yeah, just very briefly, Proctor couldn't set a time in the fast six because his car died halfway around the lap, just powered down. Loss of electronics, which is a shame for him, caused a red flag, and everyone got to... did the clock get reset at that point? It did.
No. So they did exactly what they did the last time we had a stop qualifying session, which is they went out and did their warm-up lap, did one quick lap, and then back in, all apart from Dorlin, I believe.
Yeah. Right, we might as well get into the action on
to race one.
The Sunday, yeah, on to race one, as you say. So with race one then, and actually Dan Camish got the worst start I've seen for a while, bogged down off the line, and then Chilton decides that didn't fancy this weekend at Thruxton and managed to slide and spin off on his own.
It was one of the Chilton weekends where he just didn't want to turn up,
wasn't it? Yeah, it didn't go his way at all, really. Rainford had to take avoiding action, was a bit unlucky in all of this, really. He took to the grass to try and avoid Chilton and spun across the pack himself. Quite lucky not to be collected.
So lucky. That could have been a big hit as well, although it wasn't too far down the road towards Allard. It would have been quite an impact, and he was lucky to get away with it.
This caused the first safety car of the day. It was quite a busy day for the safety car drivers, to be fair. But before they got to the line to be picked up by the safety car, Ingram did get past Sutton at the final chicane. He did, however, give the place back under safety car, as the replays were clear. He'd overtaken after the safety car boards. Which is a little bit naughty. You know, we said the same about Sutton. In the interest of fairness, we said the same about Sutton at Doddington at the start of the season. It's a little bit sloppy, really, because it comes up or should come up on the dashboard, and there shouldn't really be an excuse to be overtaking under safety car conditions. We've had chats before about drivers, and I'm not necessarily aiming this at the drivers involved in this occasion, but not respecting flags, not respecting the safety measures in place, and it's just another example we've seen this season.
It was also quite noticeable with one of the onboard shots as well.
Yeah.
And some nice replays, but I must say
the onboard shots are fantastic.
Of when Doble was coming up, or Doble, should I say?
You should.
Came through the chicane and was coming up to the line. It almost looked he had a run on Sutton.
Well, he did. He got past Sutton before the line,
and then realised that the safety car was out and gave that back as well. So it wasn't just Ingram.
I mean, the rules are that you race to the safety board line or safety car board line.
Yeah.
And then you stop.
Safety car boards, normally they go out from the pit lane both ways around the circuit. And when you see that, it's stop racing.
It used to be you race to the line regardless, which was a. Yeah. But this is where I think that the VSC is right in Formula One, is that that's instant. And I think that should be something that's looked at in touring cars. That is, once the safety car scramble, it's don't need a board. They've all got dashboards with lights on them. It's instant. You're under safety car conditions now.
The issue with that is, I think drivers might be, unless they get a radio call, they may be struggling to concentrate or see that light flash up. One thing I would say is that we have it in GT series. We have a code 60. Which is a pink flag that goes out, which neutralises the whole circuit to 60 k's an hour, which is basically the same as what a VSC is.
Yeah, I don't mind that either.
I'd quite like to see that introduced.
Yeah, and if I understand that they might not be able to watch the dashboard particularly.
Yep.
However, maybe then bring in, like you would on an aircraft, a noise that comes on in the cockpit as well, because this is the second time we've seen it this year.
Everyone on the pit lane as well will know when that's going to happen. There should be a radio call straight away.
Yeah, it's the second time we've seen it this year of an overtake under safety car. On either occasion, nothing serious has happened.
Doesn't mean it won't in the future, though.
Exactly that. And Doble, the same, would give the position back under the safety car. On the restart, that lasted all of 5 minutes because Hall decided that he was going to lose it. And took Osborne out, basically, in trying to avoid him, causing a further safety car. And I think this leads to, and I'm not prepped you for this question, so you're going to answer this off the hoof. It's quite an uncomfortable conversation. Is it too much too soon for Max Hall? This is 3 out of 4 weekends he's been involved in incidents. This one was so seriously damaged to the car or to his confidence, whatever you want to call it, he didn't get back out for races 2 or 3.
My query as to why he didn't get out for race two and three stems from. Do they have they just taken him back from the issue that there was in race one?
Yeah, because
the limelight that he has come over him with the incidents that have come this season. Could it be a good issue? A good practice by the team to have done that, because there didn't seem to be any coverage as to why he wasn't in race two and race three, which
and the
makes
car
me question that.
Didn't seem too badly damaged. I mean, it was damaged.
Yes, it was.
But Osborne's looked worse to me because the rear quarter had basically completely collapsed, and he was back out for races two and three.
But I must say, Osborne took avoiding action, and I don't think there was actually any contact between the two of them.
No, we're not sure because we didn't get a replay of the incident. We only saw it through onboards.
Yep.
And this is what really annoys it. It's so nearly perfect, but rather than give us the onboard of the car directly in front of the incident, we didn't have that camera this weekend, so we had to watch it from two or three cars back. We're so close to greatness. We're so close to having it right.
I know.
Just a little slight more tweak and we will be there, because basically we just saw shapes moving and we couldn't really see what happened because of it. But I do think that for Hall, it's tricky because the kid's clearly got pace.
Yes.
But that is now...
And you are going to make mistakes. It's the way that you learn in the sport, but some mistakes are bigger than others.
Well, that's three costly mistakes on the bounce, and costly in both senses of the word, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
That is the problem. Hope to see him back out racing at Alton Park, and maybe it's just a case of just that you're not going to win any championship this year, or you're not going to win the main championship this year. Yeah. Probably not going to win Jack Sears, if we're being brutally honest. Right. Just calm down and get the experience under your belt. Get used to the way the series works, because it's different to minis. Minis, you can get away with a little bit of contact, you can get away with a little bit more. It's a little bit more argy-bargy. Drivers potentially expect it a little bit more, whereas if you're taking off a three-time champion at Snetterton, he doesn't take very kindly to it because you just don't expect those kind of hits in touring cars.
Right.
When we got back underway, I've written there no replay. That was one of the first problems of the cameras this weekend, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. The safety car came in on lap number 7, and then we saw Dobble with a problem pulling off to the side of the road of his first problem of the weekend.
Quite a smoky problem, isn't it? It's fair to say the Astra or the M Sport engine this weekend did not fare well in that Astra.
No.
And he was in sort of a lucky position in the fact that Halstead wasn't racing on the Sunday. And the team were able to basically unbolt the front end of his and bolt it straight onto Mikey's car. Although in race two, we'll get onto that, it didn't last too long either.
No, which is worrying in its own right.
It is.
We then saw perhaps the biggest controversy of the weekend, if you like, on the track maybe, which was Sutton and Ingram side by side down into the final chicane. Sutton, to me, and I've seen differing opinions on social media, to me, brakes and the car wiggles. I think that's...
brakes extremely late, both of them.
They both brake late. Yes. They both brake late, with Camish sort of lurking behind. Sutton, as he brakes, the car is unsettled. You can see it bobbling around.
Yes.
And he slides into Ingram. There's no two ways about it. He slides into Ingram. Both of them take to the chicane and both emerge ahead of Camish and with a bigger gap. Now, for me, I can understand why Camish should be a little bit potentially annoyed. I'm not saying he is.
Aggrieved.
But I could see how one might feel annoyed if one was Dan Camish.
Yep.
Particularly given last year we saw Ingram cut the chicane in race one, and he was, after the race, had the result reversed. He was given a fairly hefty penalty, which put him off the podium. I would say in this instance for Ingram, he did nothing wrong. I don't think he's done anything wrong particularly. I think the two of them come together and they cut the chicane. Is there an answer for this? Because I don't want to see tyre stacks back, because Adam Morgan did that...
we've got there are Tech Pro barriers, which are big blocks of foam which tend to do very little damage to the vehicles. It just puts up that barrier to try and deter the vehicles from blasting straight across, but they do have gaps in between each of the barriers, which Morgan went through, and also to each extent of the barrier there is a gap for a car to go safely through. But as we've seen before, and we saw this in the F1 in Barcelona, they had a negotiated lane that they had to take to come back onto the circuit, and sometimes that lane was actually quicker than what the racing line was.
But I think that's the answer, personally. Yeah. I think that is the answer, to have a secondary chicane, the slalom, because we've seen it in dare I say, Sochi, which I really enjoyed as a track. You had that quite big, you had to go around the bollard, didn't you? If you didn't go around the bollard, it was a 5-second penalty, whether or not.
And they have it in MotoGP as well. There's several circuits that I've seen where they have that escape road, as it were, that will be a penalty. But it's not an ultimate penalty of having damage to the car. It is a time penalty, and something probably those two drivers could have got back this weekend because they were supremely quick.
Yeah, and I say it did kind of, you know, it ruined the potential three-way battle because at that point they did put time on Kamish, in my opinion. The gap certainly seemed bigger. Yep. And then obviously if Kamish has already used his boost, I don't write down when all the boost has been used, etc. But he's potentially wasted a lap of boost in closing up, going into there, etc., etc. So it's a tricky one. I think it does need looking at. I do think that some of Ingram's comments were a little bit sore from and a little bit childish. From
needly?
Yeah, a bit childish, bringing up some of the stuff from last year. That we know the rules and this sort of thing changes all the time. Track limits changes on a daily basis. So, you know, you can't be digging up the past particularly, but I do think there needs to be a longer term solution to dealing with this particular issue, particularly at Thruxton as well, because this is always a problem year after year after year. Then we had, I mean, it was such a busy race. Sheddon was given a code brown moment with the help of Proctor, who basically, after a couple of corners, door banging, barged into his rear corner and sent him a skewiffy just before Church. I think it was around Noble, which is... Proctor was punished for this later on. We'll get to that in penalty corner. Pretty slam dunk, pretty sloppy, a bit rusty, I think, from Proctor. You might give him that as the only sort of...
Sheddon scooped up a load of grass as well into the front of the radiator, which meant that I think he had to pit to clear that one out.
Yeah, and you might give him the very slight benefit of the doubt, Proctor, that he's been away for a while. However, that's potentially being a little bit kind. Then Rowbottom, who I thought had a brilliant weekend, as we'll get to, but as throughout the weekend, produced his first... basically the same move as you did throughout the weekend.
And last year.
Yeah, through the complex where basically he forces the guy to defend on the inside before he runs himself around the outside of the inside for the next corner. It's a really nice move. Yeah. And as he said in an interview at some point throughout the weekend, he's stunned nobody else seems to have picked up on it or using it themselves because it's really good, isn't it?
Sutton tried it towards the end of the weekend, but Robot has certainly mastered it, we'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple more notes from this race. Cook was into fourth and would eventually get himself into third. As
he did really, really well to recover the field. Yep. Obviously, we know how quick that he goes at Thruxton, and he certainly proved that. Probably a good drive from him.
Yeah, and then the Napa team, hungry for success, as they always are, decided that the cars wanted to eat their own number plates, which was very interesting. And this caused Sutton a bigger problem than Kamish. So it looks basically as if the number plates were sucked into the radiator system.
So they've got a little air intake just to the right-hand side of the front grille. And for whatever reason, it detached itself and got sucked in.
Yeah, although on Kamish's car, it made no difference. And on Sutton's car, it made a lot of a difference because he started to slow and Kamish would get through these and then eventually Cook would catch him and get through into third as well. And Sutton would, in the end, finish fourth, which given... the circumstances, I'm sure he would take.
Those four did have a decent gap.
Yes,
it was
did,
coming into the last few laps, so Sutton was able to hold it quite easily.
And the final thing to say for this race is that Chilton, who did get himself back going, then bagged himself a 10-second time penalty for track limits. So not ideal for him.
That's because you backed him this weekend.
It was because I backed him this weekend. Yeah, it was. The final race positions for race one, then?
Yeah, Ingram from Kamish from Cook. As we said, Sutton finished fourth from Damrow at bottom in fifth. Jake Hill had a quiet race, but ended up sixth overall, followed by James Dawley, who managed to hold position in Toyota. We thought
it
might
well.
Fall through the field a little bit, especially with the straight line speed issues that they've been making more apparent to the bosses, haven't they?
Yes, yes.
Adam Morgan finished in eighth. Senna Proctor, first time back, finishes ninth. From Daryl DeLeon, Chris Smiley, Aaron Taylor-Smith, Dan Lloyd, Aidan Moffitt and Tom Chilton.
Right, let's jump straight into race two.
Getting on to race number two now then, and as we've already mentioned, Max Hall would not be on the grid for race two and consequently race three as well. Sutton.
Yeah.
Rocket ship.
Yeah.
Absolute rocket ship. I don't think we've ever seen as good a start from a front-wheel drive car on a grid in the time we've been watching touring cars.
Not that springs to mind. They might as well drop the P and put in an S for NASA because it was unbelievable, wasn't it? Just scythed through them, didn't they? From fourth.
Yeah, managed to squeeze past both Cook and Kamish, and then dive down the inside of Ingram. I don't think Ingram was expecting it.
No.
And by the complex, he was in P1, and by the end of the first lap, he was off
In Orton Park, yeah, it was in Orton Park, wasn't he? Unbelievable.
He had already gone. Consequently, not really consequently, Kamish had had another poor start, was down 5 places on the opening lap, which was quite a surprise. And Hill managed to gain 2 spaces on the opening lap with a good move.
Yeah, round the complex, decent move by Hill, who, just needs to try and do what he could this weekend, given the clear lack of power or lack of just general all-round compared to his competitors in the Hyundai and Ford.
Yeah, and it was noticeable in the other BMWs as well, which I'll get on to.
Were they there?
Yeah, I'll get on to that with my soapbox. By the end of lap 2, Sutton had a gap of 1.8 seconds, which in touring car terms is a chasm.
Yep.
And it didn't even look like he'd used his extra allocation of boost for that race at that point. It was just on pure pace alone and grit and determination and possibly annoyance from the end of race 1.
Yeah, I think the only thing I was concerned of at this point was, what is he doing to the tyres? Because obviously you don't want to be caning your tyres too hard around thrux, and it's very abrasive and it's very hard on tyres. But that was my only fear at that point.
Yeah, and he is a 4-time British Touring Car champion for a reason.
Yes.
His tyres were fine by the end of the race. He managed to hold on. And that was that, really. No. So Dobble managed to get up to 16th by the end of lap 3, which was a good start on the road to recovery.
Yeah, because
although short-lived.
There's not many places you can overtake round thrux, and it is basically the two complexes, because you'd be bonkers to try in other parts of the circuit. But as you say, it quite short-lived, because after all the hard work that PMR had done to get that car ready for race 2, full engine change in under 90 minutes, which is phenomenal work, let's be honest. You go down to your local garage tomorrow and ask them to try that on your car and see if they can do it in 90 minutes. If they do, you're going to be looking for probably a 5-figure sum for the privilege. So incredible work from the PMR boys and girls, and unfortunately just not rewarded.
Lap 8, his race was cut short into the pit lanes with overheating. I don't know what went wrong with the Astra engine.
The only interesting thing is that in race 2, there was a shot of him where he cleared smoke in the car. Now, Houser had that exact problem at Snetterton, where he said he was at the point of you passing out being sick, so he had to get the door open, etc., etc. So is that a problem on Houser's car specifically? Because they took the front end of Houser's car and plugged it into Dobbles. Is that a problem with the Astra intrinsically? It's something for the PMR team to be really looking at going into Orton Park, because that is effectively 3 engine failures, possibly 4, because I think Houser had 2 engine problems at Snetterton within a 6 race period, which is a lot of things to go wrong.
It is quite a surprise, and it is also the stock engine for the series, which they're going to be scratching their heads over, because we haven't seen this issue in the Cupra, which is also running the M Sport engine.
Has it got an engine?
Or in the Honda, which is also running the M Sport engine. So it may be intrinsic to the Astra, as you say. Chilton was into the pits at the end of lap 3. Looked like a tyre change, which I was really hopeful for. It was going to be a puncture. But he was in there for quite a while.
Didn't come back out. So normally, obviously, you would send the car back out, because whilst you can't score points in the race, he could still score points.
This lap?
Well, he could still score points to manufacturers by finishing.
Yep.
And also, of course, you want to check that everything is sorted for race 3, because you don't get any testing between races. This is your chance to make sure everything's fixed and shipshape for race number 3. And he didn't come out and set any laps, which is interesting. To me, suggests a more terminal problem than just a puncture.
Yep. And then Shedden was back into the pits on lap 4, again, to clear grass out of the front of his car. I don't think we saw any sort of replay as to why on this one, unfortunately. But it was, again, another weekend to forget for Shedden.
It's just not worked, and I'd be stunned if he's here next year.
Yeah, so the way he was talking, I can't remember if it was the start of race 2 or race 3, he had an interview on the grid, and he seemed very dour, especially for a Scottish man, very dour on the grid, and quite criticising, shall we say, of the top end of that Toyota engine.
Yeah, well, there is no top end, is there? It's so slow.
No. Robo pulled another mirror move, as he did per race 1, to get past Hill into the complex. Him and Hill would be having a good ding-dong battle this weekend, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they did. They've got a little bit of history between them as well. But this weekend, it was certainly very clean between the pair. And the Robo impressed me this weekend. He did say he did the same move time and time again, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And he was doing it very, very well indeed. And I'm jumping slightly ahead to the end of the weekend here, but he's now third in the championship with these this weekend's results. You know, it's he's driving very well indeed.
Yep. Morgan went on to make a move past Hill into the final complex as well. There were contact between the two, and they both cut the chicane. This is where Morgan went through the Tech Pro barriers and just opened them up.
Which makes a slight mockery of them in some ways, because he's able to go through that and not damage his car in any way, shape or form, apart from a little bit of, you know, cosmetic damage to the front of it. Yeah, there's got to be a better way, isn't there?
Yeah, Hill got a little squirrely on the brakes, and there was a little hip and shoulder action which pushed Morgan off.
It was a little bit more than hip and shoulder. I think it was a bit of a poor move by Hill, to be honest with you.
Slightly kind.
Yeah, we'll cover that off in penalty corner as well.
Yeah, Hill managed to get back past Rowbottom, although we don't quite know how.
Nope.
Again, poor camera work and replays, which Russ will get onto later. We'll pull out that nice big soapbox that he's got. And yeah, they all managed to come back to the same bit of tarmac, and then Rowbottom got back past him.
Yes, he did indeed, yeah.
So, yeah. Osborne had two stops in this race. We're not quite sure why. Just Osborne things, probably because I backed him for the Jack Sears this weekend.
More than likely, yeah, more than likely.
It may have been preceding the, or as a result of the damage from race one with Hall. We don't fully know.
No, there might be some contact further down the field we didn't get to see during real time either.
Proctor managed to get past Morgan into the final chicane with basically just a boost pass. He was a lot quicker down that back straight and managed to outbrake him. And then Morgan would go on to get a 10-second penalty for track limits. Hyundai's and track limits this weekend didn't go, or went hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, one of those would have, track limits warnings would have likely been for the chicane cut.
I really hope it wasn't.
I think they would be. I think they will be. If you think of the F1 game, I know it's slightly, but if you get pushed off on the F1 game and you cut a corner slightly due to contact, you still get the black and white flag. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's still a track limit violation, which is madness.
Camish managed to get past Hill onto the final lap, coming into the final chicane. As I say, Hill's pace this weekend was just a little bit lacking. And that Napa Ford was rapid. And then ATS had major problems on the final lap and managed to drop like 10-12 positions. No real idea why, apart from Harvey mentioned how well he was doing in the race.
Yeah.
And then he fell through the field. Race two was really difficult to try and sum up because the camera work was so poor.
It was, and also race two, not a lot happened in comparison to race two, one and three. Almost like, no, I do those ones, no, and you do race two, you got a nice easy ride really.
So the finishing order on track,
oh yes, of course,
which you'll go for, was Sutton, Ingram, Cook taking the independent win, Rowbottom in fourth from Camish, from Hill, from Proctor, Dorlin winning the Jack Sears down in eighth, followed by Smiley, DeLeon, Lloyd, Rainford, Morgan, Moffitt and Pearson. However, that's not where the action finished. Coming through technical checks, Cook's car appeared to get the roller stuck, didn't it? Coming out of the front of the splitter, which pretty much we all know is a slam dunk penalty. And he was actually disqualified from the race, meaning that Robo would get a podium.
Yep.
Cook would miss out on his podium, not take the independent win either, be demoted to the back of the grid for race three, and have a lot more work to do.
So I've got two pieces of thoughts on this.
Go on.
First of all, I did find his excuse of perhaps he got a bit of damage from running into the back of Ingram quite funny, because don't run into the back of Ingram then. There you go. But I also do think that it's harsh to, when he's at the back of the grid, then to make him keep what boost he would have had he finished on the road, because yeah, particularly not so much this weekend because the tyre offset wasn't as bad. But if you were there, if that had happened at Snetterton, for argument's sake, in race
you had
one,
to run a hard tyre,
you'd be at the back of the grid, forced to run the hard tyre with the less boost. Your weekend's done then. Now, I know you'll say, well, don't fail the rules, but realistically, Cook has got no control over the ride height.
No,
really.
Apart from not crashing.
Yeah. But it's touring cars. They're on bumper to bumper all the time, and generally they don't drop on the ride height. So yeah, generally he's not got any control over that. And the daft thing as well is, and I think this is the point where I really think they should not then do the extra penalisation, is that had he finished fourth, nobody would ever know.
No.
Because they only do the top three.
Unless he had a spot check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I know. You know, and I like to make little analogies to football where I can.
Yes.
if you're the last defender in football, when you make a genuine attempt for the ball and it's a penalty, and you give away a penalty, you don't get the red card because it's double jeopardy.
Yeah.
And I think that this is, by putting him at the back of the grid, the tie rules being as they are, okay, I know they didn't apply this weekend, and the boost allocation remaining as if he was finished third, is triple jeopardy. And I don't like that because it doesn't give the driver any chance to fight back through the field. Now, I think if you get black flagged, then that's fair enough because you should not be getting black flagged.
Yep.
That's fine. But I think if you've failed on a technical check like that, a little bit of luck involved, if I'm being brutally honest, to whether you get caught or whether you don't. Yeah. So I don't think you should be taking the boost away as well.
Let us know your thoughts and feelings down in the comments below as well. We'd love to hear all your thoughts and feelings, and we received many of them over this weekend.
We have indeed.
Especially towards the end of race three, which we'll get onto next.
We saw this weekend the devastating effect that missing out on the action can cause fans. Now, you might be missing out on this podcast because you've not been putting the bell on. You've not been liking, you've not been sharing, you've not been subscribing. Sam, how do we do better than some of the camera work this weekend, ensuring that our fans miss none of the action?
Well, it isn't that difficult. You can get on the notification bell below if you're watching on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to all our social media channels, and then you won't miss out on the lovely gifts and the lovely memes that we post along with all the information that we get from the weekend. If you haven't already, go and like, subscribe, and make sure to comment.
So race three then, and because of the way the championship works, it was always guaranteed that Proctor, who finished seventh, was originally put onto pole for this race, because that's just how it always goes. We both said it was guaranteed to be number seven that pulled out, and it was. But of course, Proctor wouldn't take pole position because of the disqualification of Cook. He effectively finished sixth, which put Dorlin into seventh, which meant James Dorlin had Toyota's first pole of the season.
I did like the fact that Paul O'Neill alluded to the scripting in the championship and then had to quickly go, no, I don't mean it.
It's a joke. Quick, Jade, say something, please.
But yeah, we could all see it coming. Yeah, of course. It was just unfortunate, obviously, with the disqualification of Cook, Dorlin would be taking pole position.
Yep, it was a good start by Jake Hill, as you'd potentially expect, in the BMW, getting himself into the lead off of the line. Then we saw Rowbottom do, I mean, to quote Rio Ferdinand, this is what he does.
Yeah.
This is what he does. Give him the Autosport driver of the year now.
You would have thought, especially with the two passes that Rowbottom made on Hill in race two, Hill might have learned how to defend it by now. But
he didn't.
Not.
No, he didn't. And Rowbottom got through in the same manner, which was to force Hill to defend the inside of the first part of the complex. Sweep back, which he's definitely been watching Sutton do, because that sweep under the bumper.
Right around the outside, And head for the final part of the complex and getting out onto that back straight and just pulling away.
Yep. We then saw Dan Lloyd join the penalised Hyundai Club, which was quite a big guest list this weekend. He was given a 5-second penalty for a false start. Yeah, but as I say, every time they happen, it will happen to most drivers throughout their career.
There are more of them on the grid.
Yeah.
So you could kind of expect them to get more penalties, but yeah.
Yeah, potentially. Dorlin seemed to have a bit of an issue in the opening few laps because he certainly dropped down the order, which is a shame because, I don't think he necessarily had a chance of winning this race, being realistic, but he certainly had a chance of consolidating a good weekend of some good points finishing.
He had had a really good weekend up until that point. So, yeah, it would have been a nice cherry on the top if he'd have managed to stay on the podium, but that wasn't to be.
We then saw, I think I mentioned it at Snetterton, that I might mention it on the preview actually, that I wonder if there'll come a time when Ingram starts to get a bit more robust with Sutton, because Sutton's certainly robust with Ingram. That came to pass here. Sutton got through at the complex with I think it was just about the right side of legal. However, I would understand that opinions differ, and I can understand that if you're pro Tom, that you'll probably think this is a little bit too much. So Sutton through the complex basically does what Rowbottom did, however, with a bit of contact to Ingram's rear quarter, and then forced him, or basically ran him wide off the circuit.
Yeah, ran him wide with contact as well, which is something different to what Rowbottom had been doing all weekend. He'd been managing to make those moves nice and cleanly.
I think you would argue, if I was Sutton's lawyer, which I'm not, that if you want to apply F1 rules, which are dumb anyway, but it was his corner.
It was his corner.
He had won the corner. However, he did contact Ingram. There's no doubt about that. And he did run him wide and off the circuit wide. Did Ingram have time to back out? Probably not on replay. It's one of those I think is a old-fashioned touring car move that, for me, I don't mind. However, I can see why some might not like it.
It's fair to say that Ingram lost ground because of it, because he was pushed out onto the grass, although he did keep his foot nailed, which he seemed to be doing all weekend, even in the wet of qualifying. But it did lose him a couple of positions, which he'd then fight back with.
Absolutely. Morgan then had a off at T1 all on his own, a turn one, by dipping a wheel and really rocking
brain
himself.
Brain fade, I think.
Yeah, I've not seen a crash caused by oneself at that corner before. I've seen Andy Neat cause an incident at that corner before.
Just that's all we need to say.
I've seen quite a few crashes at that corner before with contact, but not with...
Yeah, he could only been an inch or two that he dropped that tyre onto the dirt on the outside of the circuit and the back end just let go. And he was straight to the scene of the accident in the tyre wall and brought out a safety car.
So I'm going to cut you off there. We need to go to an ad break.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Because that's what happened under the safety car. We decided that we needed to...
We both looked at each other and gone, this is going to restart before this ad break finishes.
Yep.
Who'd have thought? It did. And lots happened.
Yep. And we still don't know exactly what happened.
Do you know what it reminds me of? And I'm going to take this back to football once again. It's the Gosling goal in the Merseyside derby in the FA Cup.
That is niche, but yes, it is. And it's the really annoying thing about this is that had there not been a safety car in this race, there would not have been an ad break. So you can't say it was a scheduled ad break, there was no choice. Had there not been a safety car, there would not have been an ad break. It was a choice to go to an ad break, and it's a poor one.
And if there was a red flag, I'd kind of understand it.
I would begrudgingly understand it. And now people are coming out defending it, going, oh, I expected it to take longer to rebuild the tyre barrier. Let's watch some replays at the start. Let's have Tim Harvey baffle on about, you know, something or what, you know.
He does like to waffle.
Yeah. And I know we take the mickey out of that, but that's surely better than seeing the donkey appeal for the 15th time today. I mean, and we did miss something. We missed the restart.
We missed a lot.
We've got no idea really what happened. Pearson went into the back of Rainford, but having looked at Pearson's social media, it appears he had contact from behind.
Yes.
So we don't know.
And the penalties that have been applied would suggest that as well, where De Leon has contacted into him.
Apparently so.
And Rainford's been the completely innocent party.
Yeah.
Both of which were out of the race because of it.
Yeah, Pearson's bonnet was up and couldn't see where he was going. Yeah. I'm fairly sure Camacho got past somebody as well. And I'm not entirely sure because, and then not even show any replays after and go, look, we've really messed up here. Quick, let's have a replay to try and catch you up with what's happened here. It's stunning. And as somebody that gets on this soapbox, it's something I say all the time, it's supposed to be the top tier of tin top motorsport. That is so tin pot. Not tin top, tin pot. It's untrue.
And the extra cameras that we're starting to see creep in over the season are all well and good, but when you have something as big as this...
Yeah.
Then come into the fold, it really just drags it back. It almost,
if you can't get the basics right, there's no point having the onboard cameras and all these other bits and pieces, because if you can't do the basics, then you know it's just so poor. And I understand that, you might have thought the barrier take a bit long to repair. Why risk it? There's no need to risk it. There's plenty of action we could have watched. As you know, as you say, rewatch the start. Normally, we spend 7 laps on the safety car. Well, Tim gets confused between the two nappers or something, you know, but it's better than watching ads. It's so poor.
Anyway, what else happened?
Cavendish would then get past Hill with a good move. Hill started to fall down the field a little bit, and whether it was frustration, whether it was a little bit of pushing a little bit too hard, I don't know. But he would then hit Sutton and send him spinning coming out of the complex. It looked basically as if Hill just slid, lost a little bit of control of the car. Maybe a little bit of grip problems with the rear wheel drive car, slightly cold tyres after the safety car, maybe.
Yeah.
But
it felt quite clumsy.
It did.
It's not like he's had a curb contact and the car slid wide. It has just oversteered. And as he's corrected it, it clipped Sutton's back end. Sutton's done a full 360 pirouette, missed everyone somehow, got it going back in a straight line in seventh and was able to continue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to wax lyrical too much about Sutton because people might start suggesting we've got an agenda, but
awesome.
It's amazing. And to the reaction, but also to be brave enough to go, do you know what, I'm just nailing the throttle here, because my instinct to that would be to probably brake rather than to nail the throttle and try and spin the car around. And do appreciate in a front wheel drive car, you can do that where you can't do that in a rear wheel drive car.
And you're not a professional racing driver.
There is that.
Just add that bit.
There is that bit. Yeah. But yeah, it's supreme car control. Yeah, it's so well caught. And such speed as well. That's a quick part of the circuit. And he's caught that so quickly. And yes, he's got a bit lucky. He's not been taken out on the way. But you make your own luck to a degree. And Hill would get penalised after that. And actually, it ruined Hill's race anyway, because he, after hitting Sutton, took to the grass, filled his car up with grass and would slip all the way back down the field. I think he did have to pit. Yeah, he did. He did come in a pit, didn't he, to take that out. Ingram then did a push to pass. Boost pass. What do you want to call it? Yeah, it's push to pass. Just not in the traditional penalising sake.
Not in the traditional BTCC way.
Tom Ingram did a DRS pass on Camish into seconds. Good weekend for Ingram, point scoring wise. Mm. And Mikey Doble finished off a fantastic weekend for himself by getting a 10-second penalty for track limit violations. All of this meant that Dan Rowbottom was able to take a victory and move himself up to third in the standings. Mm. Excellent start to the season from Rowbottom so far. That's fine. Excellent start to the season from Rowbottom so far. Tom Ingram coming home second. Dan Camish on the podium. Senna Proctor, what a weekend from him. Absolutely blew all expectations out the water.
Yep.
And finishing fourth. Sutton in fifth. Aaron Taylor-Smith sixth. Good result for Aaron Taylor-Smith, given you know, he fell down the order in race two and Toyota haven't really been there or thereabouts. Josh Cook in seventh. Tom Chilton in eighth. Dan Lloyd in tenth. Gordon Shedden in tenth, sorry. Sam Osborne 11th. Aidan Moffat 12th. I'm just in my head.
Struggling to read.
I'll come back to it. 13th, Mikey Doble. Darragh Leon 14th. And Jelly 15th. On the road, I'm thinking Smiley's missing because Smiley finished ahead of them on the road. He finished fifth. However, Smiley was disqualified after joining the penalised Hyundai Club, which I think Ingram's the only non-paid-up member this weekend who got excluded from the results for failing a post-race weight check.
Yeah, put pay to your independent win this weekend,
so
did he
close.
Not?
I was so close. Do we do awards and then we'll do our predictions and then we'll do championship standings and round it off from there. So our awards from the weekend then. My drive for the weekend, I've gone for Dan Rowbottom. I think he took two podiums, raced really well. I keep watching that movie the first complex on repeat. So yeah, Dan Rowbottom, excellent weekend from him.
For me, it's going to be Ingram, second in qualifying, a race win, and 2 seconds as well. It's pretty close to a perfect weekend. Yes, there were some incidents along the way, but we know how quick he is, and he's raced really well this weekend.
Yep, that's fair enough. Villain of the weekend.
Mine's going to be the Astra engine.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because it really let Mikey Doble down, especially at a time where he could have kicked on in the Independence Championship and made a real staunch... How do I put it?
Extended his advantage?
Well, yeah. Maybe,
lay down a marker?
Yeah, lay down a marker and really put his flag in the ground for actually going out and taking that Independent title win on his own.
I think the only solace to him will be due to the other disqualifications around the weekend. He's not actually lost that much ground. But yeah, I understand that entirely. My villain, surprisingly nobody, is the ITV camera work. It's shoddy, it's poor. I'm not going to get back on the soapbox, but we can all do better.
Yeah, one we agree on. Surprise, good.
Yeah, it's Proctor, isn't it? I mean, wow. I had more faith in him coming into this weekend than you did, as is reflected in our predictions, but I didn't imagine it'd be this good.
No. If you'd have said to me at the start of the weekend, he's going to get into the Super 6, I'd have gone, yeah, don't think so. If you'd have said to me that he'd have gone on to finish so highly in each race as well, yes, he's had a little bit of a grievance in race one with Shedden, but coming back into it, he's done extremely well. He's scored 30 points this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We agree on that one. And surprise bad, I've gone for Stephen Jelly. It's just not working out for him this season. And I appreciate the car hasn't been necessary there, but Cook this weekend, I know he likes trucks. And we know he goes well here. Yes, yes, yes. But that's only half of it. You can go well at a circuit and then, you know, drive a matchbox car around and it won't be as fast as a racing car. It's clear the Honda goes well here. And did Jelly score a point this weekend? I don't think he did.
He did in race three, finished 15th, and that was about it.
Brilliant.
My surprise bad of the weekend is going to be the BMW, but obviously not Hillside. They were almost non-existent. So Rainford, De Leon, Moffitt really struggled to score points. I think the highest position they finished of those three was 9th. And it kind of pushes me back to where the BMWs were sort of at the start of the season at Donington.
Yeah, obviously, Idea Mark this weekend might be a track that they come back stronger and wasn't right, simple as that.
No.
Right, shall we quickly cover penalty corner and then we shall go through our predictions and the final, and the final, you know, put the teeth back in and the driver's standings as we go to Alton Park.
Yeah, so in race one, Senna Proctor received an official reprimand and 2 penalty points.
Welcome back, Senna.
Yeah, for the contact that he had with Gordon Shedden. In race two, as we've already said, Josh Cook was disqualified for failing a high ride height even at the end of the race, and Jake Hill received a verbal warning for causing that collision with Adam Morgan, which sent Adam Morgan wide at the final complex. Chris Smiley was disqualified from round 12, race three, for failing the weight check at the end of the race. Jake Hill received another official reprimand and two penalty points on his licence for the collision with Ash Sutton, so coming out of Noble, I think, onto the back straight. And then Daryl DeLeon, this is the one that we didn't see because they were in the ad break, received an official reprimand and two penalty points on his licence for causing collision with Ronan Pearson. And consequently, we said Ronan Pearson had come out on social media to say that Rainford was an unfortunate consequence of that contact.
Which, you know, without the replay, everyone would assume, and with some justification, that Pearson's running back of Rainford unaided, because that's the obvious thing to do, to conclude, which would be wrong. So the importance of good camera work. Right, shall we do predictions, and then we'll finish off with the driver standings, as I say. It was a fairly, you know, mixed weekend, affected by judicial decisions, we should say. So neither of us got pole, as I went for De Leon and you went for Camish.
Yep. And then I went for Camish, Ingram and Sutton to be winners.
You got one of those, with Sutton.
I got two of those. Ingram won as well.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Yes, two of those. Camish was almost there, but ran fairly well all weekend. You had Hill, Sutton and Chilton. Chilton really let you down, he did.
So 1 point for me, that is fine.
And then we both lost out in the Jack Sears. You go for Rainford, me for Osborne. Leon was the winner overall.
Yeah, both losing race one off there. Weekend didn't really help, did it? So
no. I went for a double race winner because I thought all on the same tyre, we might see that, and then Sutton had other ideas.
I'm going to mention something on that to my final four, but carry on.
Okay. Ford and Hyundai on every podium. Now, going into race three, into the final laps, you were hopeful, weren't you?
I was hoping for an earthquake or something. I might just or an EMP or something, because, yeah.
So I'm secretly quite pleased with that one.
Yeah, you did well on that one.
See a puncher. Now, we don't think that the Chilton one was, so we're not going to count it towards that. We haven't seen any other evidence that there were punchers in the touring car races this weekend, so unfortunately I miss out on that one.
You do, yeah.
Your ones were Smiley winning the independent.
Which he was. So we've got disqualified from race three, so thank you for that one.
No podium, but a top six for Cook was done in race one.
Yep.
And then race one and two to have the same podium drivers.
What I would say is that the no podium for Cook, had Sutton not eaten his own number plate, I would have been very pretty on that one.
Yes, you would.
But no.
And then Proctor's points, you went for 17, I went for a measly 8, and as I've already said, he scored 30 this weekend, so you get a point for that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's ahead of quite a few drivers in the championship as well, which is quite funny. Well, let's just do the championship standings, then we'll do final thoughts. As you'd expect, Ash Sutton leads the way at the top of the driver standings from Tom Ingram. Daniel Rowbottom, who is now into the top three, which I think if you said that, you know, four races in, I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't have believed you.
Snapped your hand off.
I wouldn't have believed you had you said it, to be honest with you. But he is third in the championship.
He is 40 points behind Tom Ingram, must I say. There is a massive chasm of a gap.
Those two are clearly ahead at the top. And then Dan Camish is in fourth. Jake Hill is in fifth. Adam Morgan, who's having a decent season down there in sixth. Cook, seventh. Tom Chilton, eighth. Chris Smiley in the top 10, with Rainford rounding out the top 10. Doble will consider himself slightly unlucky, I think, to be outside that top 10. A difficult weekend for him this weekend. Right, final thoughts. This weekend was way better for having one tyre. I'm going to come out and say it was way better. The racing was closer. It was much better. We don't need this tyre gimmick. It was better.
I'm not sure I can fully agree with you.
Didn't get a double race winner, got mixed podiums, and I think the racing at the front was much better.
I would say that I don't think we got a double race winner because Sutton's car ate itself. I think Sutton would have won both the first races if he hadn't had that mechanical issue.
I don't know, Ingram was so quick as well. Race one in particular, Ingram was really quick.
And I do think we need to keep on shaking it up with different rules and regulations to have a nice spread. At the moment, we do have two drivers, and yes, they are the best two drivers in the field, running away at the top of the championship, which, if you speak to some people that have watched F1, it can get a little bit boring.
Yeah, there's different drivers on different teams. I don't think it's boring at all, personally.
But I
don't think the tyres makes it any less boring.
I think we didn't have lots of similarities this weekend due to the tyres because there were other mechanical factors.
I just thought the racing was better.
It was an enjoyable weekend of racing.
You're not penalising people for doing well, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I know, but Gow likes to do that, doesn't he?
Yeah, but the offset is so huge normally. I just quite like the fact that people could just drive their own race this weekend, and I thought it made for better racing.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts and feelings down in the comments, how you feel a one tyre or one compound weekend goes compared to a two or possibly even a three tyre compound weekend. Whether you think that the weather on Saturday had any effect on race day on Sunday, with setups and stuff like that, and how it's going to go going into Alton Park.
Which we'll be there for, and we're bringing you up to speed with a full preview nearer the time.
Thanks very much.